This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. It's time for our talking point this morning. All of us feel unhappy at times, but mostly we know why. It could be that someone does something that upsets you, or you might miss out on something that you really wanted or felt that you deserved. You might be lonely. Maybe a partner, child, or a friend has died, and that makes you feel sad. It might be something as simple as the weather. A cold, wet winter's day sometimes gives us the blues. In those situations, we know why we feel depressed. But what if we experience those feelings intensely for long periods of time, weeks, months, even years, without any apparent reason? Depression is more than just a low mood. It's a serious condition that affects your physical and your mental health. The causes vary, as do the signs to be aware of, not just in ourselves, but those around us. Beyond Blue's lead clinical advisor, Dr. Grant Blaski, joins us to discuss depression and anxiety this morning on our Talking Point. Grant, a very good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
What's the difference between feeling unhappy and feeling depressed?
Yeah, well, it's really great that you're talking about this on your show, and I should say I've been enjoying your show this morning with all these
Thank
interviews
you.
With Australian of the Year nominees. Been fascinating. So you raise a really good point, and of course, you know, being unhappy sometimes or sad or about losses, that's pretty much being human. The thing that with people who are experiencing mental health issues like depression is it's a much more sort of severe lowered mood, and they can't sort of just snap out of it. And I guess it's fair to say in some ways, like the way we talk, the language we use, you know, your footy team might lose and you go, oh gosh, I was really depressed that St Kilda, yeah, in my case, lost the game. But that's very different. And I work as a clinical GP as well. And when you see someone that's really experiencing depression, you know, they can't sort of just talk their way out of it. And it has impacts on their day-to-day functioning in their life. So it affects relationships. It affects their work life. And often people get, you know, sort of isolated, not wanting to go out and stop doing the things that they want to do. So it's different to that sort of everyday sadness that all of us have every now and then.
So can something that you're unhappy about, could be a death in the family or a close friend, maybe a disappointment in life where you miss out on a job or you know something happens, can that lead to what is known as clinical depression? Do you develop it? Does it? Can you catch it as such? You know, how does it develop? Why does it develop?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it gets into that whole nature versus nurture debate, and researchers have looked at this for many years. And the reality is it's a mix of sort of genetics. So, you know, we know that things like depression often run in families, not always, but if you've got lots of family members who've experienced it, you're more likely to. And then also it's life experiences. It's, you know, people who've been through a lot of losses or who are isolated are also more at risk. So it's one of those conditions that's a mix of both genetics and also your life experiences.
Okay, so if you have something in your life that does make you feel unhappy, why are some people able to move on, and why does it move or become or evolve into depression in others?
Yeah, look, we're all very different. And as you rightly say, some people go through the most difficult, horrific life circumstances and they seem to bounce back and they're fine. And other people might have some minor issues that they really becomes a sort of dominant part of their thinking and it really gets them down. So we're all very different.
But is it something in your brain that makes that happen? Is it something that you can't control? Is it something physical about your brain rather than just the way you think about things?
Well, this is where it's both. It's both. And of course, every thought we have is actually a chemical reaction as well in our mind. So the whole sort of dual, you know, is it physical, is it psychological debate, sort of ends up a bit of a cul-de-sac, because it's both in those cases. Okay. I should add that as a GP, for a lot of people, a common scenario we see is if they're putting up with a lot of physical health issues, so chronic physical disease is another risk factor. So if you're putting up with a lot of pain or trouble with your health, that can also be a risk factor for having some mental health issues as well.
Dr. Grant Blaski is back with us. And I will point out that although, as you heard, Dr. Blaski is a doctor, a medical doctor, the advice that is given this morning is of a general nature, and of course, if you have your own situation, it's best to consult, of course, medical advice or psychological advice for yourself rather than just relying on what is said of a general nature this morning. David is first. Good morning, David.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Phil?
Well, it's Rod here, David.
Rod, sorry, Rod.
Phil's back next week, mate.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, look, as mentioned by you yesterday, well, I worked, I'm 59, nearly 60, and I worked for 40-odd years of my life till about 5 years ago, and I went through some, and still going through some physical dilemmas, but I live by myself. I've got 4 elderly children, and I just can't get out of it. I've seen my doctor. I've been through the programs.
You've been diagnosed, with clinical depression?
Yes, and anxiety as well.
Right, yeah.
And I've been to see a psychologist a couple of times. He's given me some advice to say, you know, get something, get a purpose in your life or something like that. But I just can't break out of it. It's just not happening.
Okay.
I might be weak of nature or something.
I don't think that's the case. Just hang on there, David. So Dr. Grant Blaski, of course, cannot comment specifically on David's case. But why is it that some people are able to move on with their lives and either deal with it through medication or other ways, and others simply can't?
Look, it's a great question, and as you rightly say, I can't give specific advice to David, but David, thanks so much for calling in, because you've actually raised some really important issues that I'm sure listeners will be interested in. So the first thing to say is depression's really common. Like in any 1 year in Australia, 1 million people have proper clinical depression, so not just a bit sad about things. And that's what I see as a GP. I mean, every consultation, you know, session, we'll see a few people who are going through depression. That's one of the most common GP consultations. But David's really pointed out a couple of typical sort of risk factors. So the first thing is that he's retired, and often when people are going through life transitions, so, you know, you're retiring, or with the younger blokes, you know, they've just suddenly become a father, or any big life transition sometimes can be a risk to time. Physical conditions, and David alluded to the fact that he's had some physical issues, and importantly, he said that he's often alone. And we know that isolation, not being connected with people, can be a real risk factor as well. So, you know, I think as David discusses, people often try things, they go along with a psychologist, they have a chat, and it's quite difficult to sort of snap out of it or to try and get yourself right. And maybe as we keep chatting this morning, I can talk about what we know in terms of the evidence of what actually helps people get better.
Okay. David, what else have you tried?
As I said, I'm on antidepressants,
yep,
and things like that. Look, there's nothing really in my life that I should be really sad about. Like, you know, I can feed myself, I can,
yes,
do all them sort of things. But when it comes to actually snapping out of it all, and this year I've had, last 12 months, I've had two grandchildren born.
Right.
And I love them deeply, and they are my probably the cause of me wanting to help myself. But I just finding it so bloody hard. And I'm up at, what time is it now? 4:00 or 5:00.
That's right. Yeah.
I went to bed at midnight and tossed and turned for 3 hours, drove to McDonald's and got a chocolate shake. And, I'm not worrying about anything. I just can't relax. And when I do, I'll stay in bed for 12 hours. No worries at all.
Well, at least you're seeing, you have medical help. That's the thing. And don't stop on that. David, I wish you the best, and obviously wish there was something we could do for you, but stick with it, and hopefully things will get better. Does it just go away, Grant?
Look, I think what David is describing is really common, and I'm always cautious. People say, just do this, just do that, and you'll be right. And the reality is that there are a lot of people out there who sort of deal with what we call chronic relapsing depression, and they're having issues with it, and there's no sort of magic wand. It sounds like David, as we recommend, is doing a lot of the things which we know can help. So for people with more severe depression issues, the antidepressant medications have a role. He's seen a psychologist. I'd like to just mention that there's a whole lot of non-medical things that are really important and probably don't get enough attention.
For example?
Trying to get some exercise every day, there's some good studies around that, and you don't have to be training for the Olympics, but getting out and about. Trying to get that sleep-wake cycle on track, and that seems slightly ironic given that we're chatting at 4:00 in the morning, but the sleep-wake issue and getting your cycle back on track is a really big part of trying to get people sorted out with their depression. And the other thing I'd recommend is booking a routine for your week. And this is really important for people who've retired or who've lost their rhythm. So often, with my patients anyway, we get a diary out and we say, listen, every day, I want you to try and do one thing that gives you a sense of purpose and one thing that gives you a sense of pleasure, and plot it out for the week. So, you might say, okay, Wednesday morning I'm going to go pick up my grandchildren. Thursday morning I have to do my, tax return or whatever it was. So that when you get up in the morning, you're not faced with this sort of open-ended day where you can sort of get stuck in your own thoughts, but you've got a bit of a plan for the day, and I find that that's very helpful for people.
Okay. Once again, I apologise. We're obviously having trouble with Grant's phone, and we get these blasts of noise from time to time. Peter in Burley Heads. G'day, Peter.
Good morning, Grant. What's your announcer's name?
Yeah, my name is Rod.
Rod. Good morning, Rod and Grant.
Yeah. What's on your mind, Peter?
Look, Grant, I'd like to know, I'm a fairly sensitive sort of a soul. I'm 53 years of age, and I've been on antidepressants and Xanax, which is a great drug, by the way. If you were a sensitive soul, and I like to think relatively intelligent, and you take on the woes of the world and worry about the state of the world and, the homeless, and I'm a bit of a left winger, and so the state of politics and this, that, and the other, how the hell do you deal with that when it's not anything specific? And then when you get other specific stuff in your life, like unemployment, and your mum and dad dies, your mum commits suicide, it all just sort of piles up. How do you deal with that apart from exercise?
Okay, so things beyond your control, basically, right?
Yeah, Peter, that's really appreciate your call. And what you're describing, where, you're quite a sensitive soul and it sounds like you take the worries of the world a bit on your shoulders, this is a really common thing. I'm a professor at the uni, and we get these very idealistic people coming along and they're worried about, global health and the environment, anything they could be worried about, they're worried about. So, look, it, it's, double-edged sword, right? Because, and I often say this to people, if you're a bit more of a sensitive sort of person, you take things on board, you're intelligent, you know, it can weigh you down. And there's a couple of recommendations that I make to people. I say, listen, never feel like you've got to do it all on your own. Getting involved with groups of like-minded people who are concerned about similar issues is really helpful. So, you know, it might be an advocacy group. Action is a very good stress reliever. So just sitting at home worrying about things doesn't help much. But if you sort of get involved and maybe badger your local member about some things you worry about, you're actually doing something about it. It's very helpful. And the only other thing I'd say is know when to back off. And know when, you know, listen, it might not be a good idea for me to watch another very upsetting YouTube video. And we live in a world where, you know, you could spend 24 hours a day looking at the woes of the world online. The other thing that I say to some of my students is I say, look, there's 7 billion people in the world, right? None of us are probably going to be here in 100 or 120 years. So you could spend your whole life looking at, oh, look at this tragedy, look at this tragedy, look at this tragedy. But the reality is, you know, that's not going to be helpful. So, you know, yes, it's great to be sensitive. It's great to be sort of engaged in what's going on in the world, but try not to let it drag you down and sort of overwhelm you.
But isn't it the case that this is a mental illness and you can't necessarily change what you are thinking any more than if you had measles, you can't just make the spots go away, that you can't make these thoughts necessarily go away if it is a mental illness?
Well, it's a really interesting point but you actually can. And what we found is over the years, very clever psychologists and researchers have been looking at how do people with mental health problems, people with depression and anxiety, what are the sorts of thinking patterns that they get into? And a lot of it are almost sort of like habits of thinking. So I'll give you just a typical example. Let's say someone gets told off by their boss. Now, someone who's feeling mentally well will say, oh, okay, they've told me off, that's what they think, I'll try and do it. Better job next time and they'll let it go. Now, someone with depression will have what we call a sort of negative cascade of thinking. So they'll go, oh, my boss has told me off. Probably everybody at work doesn't like me. I'm probably going to get sacked and then I'm going to lose my job and have, you know, nowhere to live. And so they'll go down this whole sort of negative cascade of thinking. So the psychologists have developed this technique they call CBT or cognitive therapy, and what they help people do is take a step back, look at the way they're thinking about things, and gradually help them to develop some different patterns of thinking that are much healthier and less hard on themselves. And there's heaps of studies showing that people can change the way they think about things and they not only get better from depression, but they're less likely to get it again in the future. So lots we can do in terms of the way people think.
However, you get to the point where quite often, and it happens with, this is reported with, you know, well-known people who may commit suicide, that they felt that there's no other way. It doesn't matter what people say to them, anything that they say to them, what they cannot change their thinking, their mindset at that time.
So you've raised a sensitive issue of suicide, and I think if there's anyone out there, you know, who's concerned, it's always worth remembering that if you're feeling desperate, there's phone numbers that you can call at any time, like Lifeline, 13114, and Beyond Blue also has a 24-hour line, 1-300-224-636. So I'm going to talk a little bit about suicide, but if any of this, you know, you find a bit triggering or upsetting, it's always good to reach out for a bit of help. So in Australia, you know, the unfortunate reality, as around a lot of countries in the world, is that suicide is still occurring at a pretty high rate. You know, it's sort of up there with the road toll. And at Beyond Blue, we've been throwing everything at trying to help people who are experiencing suicidal thoughts. People should be aware that there's a free app that you can get, you know, from your Apple phone or whatever smartphone you've got, called Beyond Now. And this app helps you to track your thoughts, especially if you're feeling a bit suicidal or having those sort of thoughts, and also helps you get in contact with anyone that you might need assistance in a sort of urgent situation. And what I find as a GP is often people who are experiencing those really desperate thoughts is if they can learn to manage them, those thoughts will come like a wave and go away. And particularly if they've got people that they can rely on and reach out to when they're in a sort of a desperate state of mind.
All right, Dr. Grant Blasky is our guest this morning, and again, I apologise, we're having slight phone problems. Alex, good morning.
Good morning.
Alex, what would you like to say this morning?
Well, I've suffered for a long time with anxious depression, and for those of who don't understand, you get anxious about being depressed and depressed about being anxious. Mm. and it's ongoing, and people telling you to just pull your finger out doesn't help. But I also want to talk about shame. So a lot of people in my life would say to me, why didn't you just call me? Why didn't you just ring? You know, but when you're in that space, there's so much shame. There's this feeling that no one wants to see me like this. I'm hopeless. And you don't want to share it, and it's a challenge to share it. But I also want to say that I lost a brother to suicide, and we do have a family history of mental illness. But I want to say to people that someone who takes their own life is not always actively taking their own life. Sometimes it's just about wanting to sleep and not wake up.
Mm.
It's just, I don't want to wake up tomorrow and feel this way.
Yeah. All right, Alex. Well, thank you very much for your honesty and for, you know, hopefully helping somebody else. And that's what I was trying to make. I suppose the point I was trying to make with Grant as well, that people that do that aren't thinking right, because if they did, perhaps they wouldn't do it. But strange things happen. Chris, I think. Good morning, Chris.
Oh, good morning, Rod. Good morning, Dr. Blasky. Look, that lady who was just speaking then, yeah, she just about took the words right out of my mouth. But it wasn't about me. It's about my partner of 16 years who died last year. He suffered from chronic depression all of his life. And our 16 years together, we had some high spots, but boy, there were some pretty low spots as well. And there was nothing I could do to bring him out of it. He was on medication almost the whole time we were together. He did work. But people's attitudes towards it, as that lady said, you know, people would just say, oh, look, you know, get over it, or pull yourself together, yeah, and stuff like that. And that used to send him deeper into depression.
Because you would never say that about a physical illness.
Oh, absolutely not. No. And he just got into such a bad state that he refused to go to the doctor. I used to go and get his medications from him. And unfortunately, he died in June last year of complications from diabetes. And we didn't even know that he had diabetes. He died from a ketoacidosis, which is renal failure.
Yeah.
And that was just sort of one of the side effects of his illness, that he didn't want any, in the end, he didn't want any sort of medical treatment or anything at all. But just people's attitudes towards those with any mental illness, but chronic depression, is, you know, it was just really, really sad.
I am so sorry to hear that, Chris, but, you know, just by saying that, hopefully it might help other people, or at least change their minds.
Rod, perhaps I could just comment a little
bit. Yes, please do, Grant.
Chris. So, Chris, thanks for calling, and also Alex. And both of you have raised a really important issue about attitudes and stigma in the community. And we've seen a lot of improvements in community attitudes to mental health issues. And some of the work we've been doing at Beyond Blue, we actually found out that people are much more forgiving and supportive of people with mental health issues than you might imagine. And this has been a big change in, you know, previous decades. Yeah. My dad worked as a GP back in the sort of 60s and 70s, and there's no way, you know, a big burly plumber would come in and say, listen, I think I'm way out of depression. It just wasn't happening.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, as a GP working 2019, it's very common for people to come and talk openly.
Can I just, and I appreciate that, Dr. Grant Blasky is our guest. You're with Rod Quinn on Overnight. But Chris, I mean, Beyond Blue's been around for, I think, nearly 20 years, and certainly attitudes have changed over that time. But what's your impression about the attitude that people had towards your partner?
Well, we live in a rural area.
Yeah.
And I think the people around us really didn't have much of a...
Right.
They didn't have much of an understanding of what my partner was going through. So he would just hide himself away, really, and they'd say, oh, we haven't seen him for a long time. And I'd say, oh, no, he hasn't been very well. But they just didn't seem to think of mental illness as an illness at all. They just, yeah, they just used to
right.
They just used to brush it off, really, and invite us to things, and I would go, and they'd say, oh, he's not here with you. No, 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 he's not feeling very well at the moment. And, yeah, it was a really difficult situation.
Chris, I'm so sorry to hear about that, but I hope you're okay.
Oh, yeah, look, I'm fine. I have come to terms with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so
okay.
I just feel really, really sad for people who are going through what we went through.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Chris. Dr. Grant Blasky is our guest. We've got more calls to get to in a moment. But what about this text from Michael? He says, depression is a first world problem supposedly suffered by self-obsessed indulgent society, Grant.
Yeah, look, thanks for the text. And it's great that everyone's sort of thinking about this issue. The research tells us that that's not actually the case. We know that, you know, all around the world, in developing countries as well, mental health issues are extremely common. And we have this little calculation that, you know, out in the research world we call, you know, the burden of disease. It doesn't mean the burden like, oh gosh, that's hard. It's sort of a mathematical calculation about how much impact different illnesses are having on communities. And we know that depression, anxiety, mental health issues are right up there all around the world in terms of affecting mental health and affecting the public health of communities. So we don't think it's just a first world issue or just people, you know, sort of a bit worried. It's people who've been through it, and some of your listeners, I'm sure, would understand it's much more painful and difficult than that.
Okay. It's one of those things, obviously, that if you haven't been through it or known someone that has, then you have no understanding of what it might be like. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Rod. Good morning, Dr. Blasky. How are you?
Yeah, we're well, mate. What's your comment?
Well, I'm a retired ambulance paramedic.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm 70-odd years old. And I had no problem at all. I used to be able to handle it up till about 2016. And I've been through Granville. I've been through a lot of things. And anyway, I got run over by a car.
You just say the Granville rail disaster, which is the anniversary, I think, just yesterday or the day before, wasn't it? Or was
that's
it
right,
today? Yeah.
The
18th. That's today, in fact. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And, yeah, I've never, ever been back there. I can't bring myself to go back there.
Yeah.
I've been invited to the ceremony, but,
yes.
But the thing is, until I got run over by a car, I was good as gold. I could I'd never even thought of anything like that, but that was the only thing that sort of... But now, I could be just sitting there or driving along, and I'll just burst into tears, and that's it, I'm a blubbering mess.
That is fascinating. Yeah, I'll just get Dr. Blasky to comment on that. So does does something trigger this sometimes? Rather than just developing it and coming gradually, it actually just gets triggered, even though, as Bill has said, he obviously would have seen some terrible things, including the Granville train disaster. Something has happened to him, and then that triggers it. Why does that happen?
Yeah, so, Bill, we really appreciate your call. I don't know, I'm sorry to hear that you're having these troubles, and I think you'll find that you're very much not alone in your experience. Just last month, Beyond Blue helped launch this new report. You might have a look online, called Answering the Call, Mental Health and Wellbeing in the Police and Emergency Services Sector. And very good Professor David Lawrence led us. And they had more than 20,000 AMBOs, fire, police, fill out surveys, talk about their mental health issues. And without going into all the details, it very much reflects your sort of experience, that if you've had some pretty traumatic experiences, there's a condition we call PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which is pretty common. And we're really working hard with the emergency sector to try and look after our staff. And we have quite a lot of evidence now about the sorts of things that can help people who are on the front line, such as yourself, Bill. And it sounds like it would be a good idea in the first instance to go along through your GP and tell them what's been happening and maybe get referred to a mental health specialist.
I've already done that. I'm under a...
Right.
At the moment.
Yeah, well, and that's a good start, even though it hasn't had the right effect yet, but that doesn't mean it won't.
I've got my absolute good days, and my partner unfortunately wears some of my tantrums when I really go off it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is so important for people who live with, you know, someone who's going through this, that they need to understand that it's not you doing it; it's the disease.
And as I say, we used to handle it in the ambulance service. We used to handle it, and it was called Dr. Tui's and Dr. Rich. Luckily, I don't touch any of that anymore. But the thing was, I could probably be an alcoholic now if I kept it up.
And thanks so much for that, Bill. And I wish you the very best. And that's something else I'll ask about, that Grant. Self-medicating with drugs and alcohol, I'm sure, is something that is not uncommon in this situation. How dangerous is that?
You're exactly right. We know that, you know, rates of alcohol use and other drugs are extremely common in people with mental health issues, and they often go hand in hand. And we know that it doesn't help. It's quite interesting. If you... you know, chat to people who've got severe alcohol issues and talk about their younger lives, often you'll find it that they did have, you know, quite severe anxiety or mental health issues that they just couldn't get their head around. And the alcohol was really a response, you know, just an attempt to try and keep things under control. But ultimately, you know, going along to a health professional and getting proper help is a much more helpful way to go than trying to self-manage.
All right. Pat, good morning.
Good morning, Rod. Dr. Grant. Doctor, have you had any experience or much with diagnosing depression in people with disabilities?
Yeah, look, thanks for your call, Pat, and we do. We definitely see that mental health issues, depression, are common in people with disabilities because, you know, they've already got an uphill battle often dealing with some sort of condition or disability, and so it can make things quite difficult for them. So that we see in the real world, I guess, in my sort of general practice, a real overlap between sort of physical and mental health issues.
Can I put a couple of scenarios to you?
Yep, go on.
A person who has, for alleged best interest, been put into a totally different changed environment, totally differently living and changed environment. When I speak to them, I keep saying, "You sound very tired. You, whatever," and their speech has suffered like it can take 2 minutes to get one sentence out. But when I get them out of that environment, they are not tired. They don't sound drowsy. And their speech is restored.
Well, this is obviously a very specific situation, Pat. And I thank you very much for that call. But, Grant, you've talked about this, that obviously there is a link. And, again, it's anything else that you'd like to say on that?
Yeah, look, obviously I don't know all the details, yep. Pat, and it sounds like you're having a difficult situation. But just a couple of general tips just to be aware of. So I think... if it's an older person, sometimes, you know, one of the things we always think of as doctors is that depression can look a bit like dementia. In fact, we call it pseudo-dementia. So sometimes some older people, they'll be, you know, have moved into new living arrangements, they're not very happy there and they get depressed, and people think they've got dementia, but actually it's the depression which is sort of masquerading. So I don't know the specifics. Obviously, speak to your doctor, and it sounds like this loved one of yours needs to be assessed properly. But that's just something at least to consider and ask the question about.
Okay, and finally, Owen. Good morning, Owen.
Yes, good morning, Rod and Grant. I want to say I'd had a history of depression in my family, but I was actually a very optimistic, idealistic person until 9/11. And although I was not personally impacted by 9/11, it really had this effect on me. And ever since then, it's been up and down for me. So I've had periods of deep depression and then periods of mild depression and then periods where I wouldn't say I'm relatively normal, but periods where I feel that the world is looking upward and then it never works out. But what I quickly wanted to say is, and I know this is a difficult topic, but, you know, I hear a lot of people saying that when, you know, people who consider committing suicide, you know, they're so selfish and don't they think of people involved. But I've been there on quite a few occasions, and thankfully it's never worked out for me. But people just don't understand. Yeah. You're in a world of such pain, such sadness, and such agony, and you can't think logically.
Sure. You think there's no other option.
Yeah, that's right. And you actually think people would be better off without you. There's a lot of self-hatred and self-loathing sometimes as well.
All right. Owen, I'm glad that you went back from the brink for us anyway. Dr. Grant Blasky is our guest. James says, my best mate died 5 years ago from suicide. I think on reflection often that I should have got help to support him in his depression. Partners, friends of people with depression should also get help or support to know how to support those with depression. It's one of my many regrets, says James. It's sometimes you can do as much as possible, and it's not enough, unfortunately. Jim said it was a marriage breakup that caused that. And someone else wants to know, what about your gut health, its effect on mental health? I mean, just physical health does have an effect. You've talked about that. Is there anything in particular about our bodies that we should be getting healthier in to prevent mental health problems?
Yeah, so thanks for all those really interesting comments. Maybe if I can comment on two of them. First of all, if you've had a family member or a friend who has died of suicide, it's very common to feel guilty and you know, ruminate, should I have done something different? Should I? And you know, that's quite a common feeling. Just to be aware that Beyond Blue and a lot of the other mental health organisations like Black Dog and have got together and had a campaign called You Can Ask. And what it's really reminding people is, if you're worried about someone at suicide risk, it's actually okay to ask them, obviously in a sensitive context.
Sure.
And there's no evidence that asking them puts the idea in their mind, which is what people worry about. Are you okay? You don't seem yourself. You know, have you been thinking about harming yourself? These sort of things. that you can always ask. Having said that, if something happens, as James talked about, it's very, you know, yeah. you can't always control all the factors.
All right. We have to leave it there, unfortunately. But if people want more information, have a look at www.beyondblue.org.au or call 1300 22 46 36. That's 1300 22 46 36. Or just search Beyond Blue and hopefully you can start with the help that you need. Dr. Blaski, thank you so much for getting up this morning and thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for including me. You've got an amazing show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. And thanks all for all of our many callers with their honesty as well. And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.